Bill in Belfast, first call of the day. Morning, Bill. Hello, Bill.
Hello, how you doing?
Go ahead.
Hello, Steve. Morning. Steve, I'm just listening. Everything seems to be prosecution. Every word seems to be, other words seem to be prosecution. Why prosecute? There's people here...
It's called justice, Bill.
Yeah, but there's people here drawn into this conflict, Stephen, over the years.
And there are people who... And there are people who weren't drawn in.
Well, if I can make my point, Stephen, then we can... Maybe we'll get a clearer picture of what I'm coming from. But to say... There's always a victim. There's always going to be a victim. Everybody suffered in these troubles. Everyone had some kind of cause of troubles implanted in their brain and slept there with them. But at the end of the day, what is the prosecution going to do? Why not get these people together? I've watched programs on TV where they had a guy trying to kill another guy. They brought them, sat over a table, chatted. Is that not what we want? Isn't that meant for the last 20 years trying to bring people together? Does prosecution not create a wedge and push it further apart and create that hatred and anger?
So you don't differentiate between someone who put a gun into their hand and crept out in the middle of the night and put a bomb under someone's car and someone who chose not to. It's called justice. Are you suggesting that the people that went out with guns and shot people, whatever side they were on, are victims?
Tell me this, Stephen. Are they not suffering as well? Do they not have these sleepless nights as well of what they've done?
Some people would argue they should have a sleepless night for the rest of their lives if they went out and murdered people.
They probably do. They probably will. How do we not know?
And you're feeling sorry for them, are you?
I'm not feeling sorry for them. But what I want to do is move forward. We've 20 years down the line of this peace process, and here we are again, still talking about prosecution, everything else. But let's be honest, Stephen, if people could turn back the clock, people in this country could turn back the clock 40 years, I'm sure they'd be delayed. And if they were given the same choice, here, come here, our politicians are telling me we must defend ourselves. There's a gun, go and do this.
You could say that.
Hold on, Stephen, let me finish. You're a 17-year-old young lad, go and do this. Caught up in all this trauma.
You could say that, Bill. You could say that about any criminal. You could say to any criminal, you could walk into any jail in any country, you know, walk into any jail and say to someone that's been done for murder, that's been done for domestic abuse, that's been done for rape, that's been done for anything. If you could rewind the clock, you know, did you make a mistake? And quite a few people would say yes.
Yeah, but what about the circumstances here, Steve? We weren't living in a natural, normal civilized situation here. We weren't. Let's get it right. Let's get something right. This was not a civilized state. When you look at across the water, Scotland, England, Wales, this was absolutely way out of the question of the way people were living there. And you're trying to tell me there wasn't young people caught up in it. Soldiers as well. Let's get it all right. People went out there and done something. And now they're probably sitting back. Yeah, what about post-traumatic stress for police officers and soldiers and other people who were serving their country here, Stephen, who suffered that? Do you not think that goes across the board?
So essentially...
Maybe you've seen this from a different light.
So essentially, Bill, what you're saying, which many people in Northern Ireland would agree with, is that the criminals who were criminalised because they were deemed criminals because they were paramilitaries, they are not ordinary criminals and they deserve special status. They deserve a special understanding. They deserve an understanding that they were maybe pulled into it when they otherwise would not be. Therefore, Bill, you need to treat them differently. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Let's look at the other side of it. Now, what about the soldiers who are being... Now, there's one actually on bail being prosecuted for carrying out a job, doing their own job, doing what they're asked to do by this state, this country. And now you're saying to me they should be prosecuted. Is that what you're saying to me, Stephen? They should be prosecuted.
So what would you do? You would draw a line and no prosecutions?
Yeah, let's put it there. Exactly.
No justice.
Justice for what? What are we getting? We're getting more hatred. We're going to get more anger. People who know who actually killed their loved ones.
Well, maybe Bill, easy to say.
Steve, when you don't have a name or a face to blame, maybe it is okay. It's hard for the victims.
Maybe it's easier to say, Bill, draw a line, if you're not sitting looking at an empty seat where your daughter, your son, your mum, your dad has been taken away from you and you're damn right you want whoever did it punished.
Stephen, everyone suffered. Every family along, which were up in the caught up in working class areas, suffered somewhere along the line. So don't start preaching unless you... Are you a victim? Are you a family loved one? Me? Everyone's a liberal until they're a victim. You know, and let's look at the other side. Let's look at the reverse side of all that. You know, you're sitting there saying it. Have you suffered? Are you in a position to tell me that you know how the people feel? Hello? Stephen? Do you?
Say again, Bill.
I say, are you in a position to tell us how these people are suffering? Have you suffered from the Troubles directly? Or is it too much of a personal question? Because at the end of the day, everyone along the line somewhere has suffered something. And I think it's a case of, do yes, draw a line in the sand and say, end of. They had a prosecution all the time. Always seem to get his prosecution.
Well, let's see what we think this morning. There's loads to talk about here. 0-30-30-80-55-55. Kenny Donaldson from Innocent Victims United with us. What do you think, Kenny?
Well, I suppose many victims will be listening to this morning. Stephen, there'll be a degree of depression with it all. Just these conversations that are going around and around. I think there's something that's missing in all of this, though. And it's the following. There can be an argument made that people have been caught up in what has happened. But there are many years that have passed. And for people at this point not to the absolute futility and wrongness of what they did, they have got to show remorse for what they've done, go through a period of repentance, and also then commit to restitution for the remainder of their days. That's the bare minimum that we require in the society. Instead, what we do at every turn is try to explain away those actions, to say that somehow they were justifiable against whatever grievance those individuals perceived they had. And there was no legitimacy for it. So we've always argued that in dealing with the past, the first thing that we need is an agreement from both states, the British government along with the Irish government, and all those terror organisations, that the taking of life was never legitimate in either the advancement or defence of a political objective. If you had that, Stephen, as a foundation, then you can start to deal with these issues. But it's the rank denial of all of that which means that these issues are going to go round and round circles for every day.
Paul O'Connor from the Pat Finucane Centre, one of the groups that actually took today's ad out in the Irish News. There's a logjam here, Paul. What's the way through it?
Well, I think the way through it, thanks for bringing me on, Stephen, I think the way through it is to get the parties and the two governments together to look at this national security issue and say which way it can be solved, because no one is arguing, we are not arguing, the families aren't arguing that the British government put information in the public domain that's going to put people's lives at risk, or put information in the public domain which in any way would benefit ISIS or any other group that at the moment is trying to kill people. What we are arguing is that the government has an obligation under the European Convention of Human Rights. It should keep up to that obligation, and that is to provide for some kind of independent investigative process. And this is not beyond our ken. We are able to do this. We could do this if we went back to the Stormont House Agreement of December 2014. We have an independent mechanism. That mechanism should make the decisions. The director of that mechanism should make decisions around this. And there are Article 2 responsibilities on the government to ensure that information is not put out there that would put people's lives at risk. It can be solved, Stephen.
Well, it's not just about people's lives at risk being the issue, is it? It's about whether people can accept that if information is given to this ICR, this independent body, that information will be inadmissible in criminal proceedings.
Well, it's not actually. If you read the ad, what these families are saying is, you said you would set up an historical investigations unit. We want to see that unit set up. And I think if you go right across the victims and survivors sectors and all the groups on all sides of the community, you will find that families are saying, set up an investigative process which has credibility. So, I mean, the words ICIR aren't even mentioned in this ad, Stephen. What I will say about that, and I agree with Geoffrey Donaldson, what you're looking at in that mechanism is what occurred in the Bloody Sunday Tribunal. Members of the Parachute Regiment that gave evidence in the Guildhall and area, well, actually they refused to do it, but gave evidence in London at the tribunal, could not be prosecuted on the basis of that evidence.
If the British government
that
discloses...
That did not mean that they had immunity. People that give information to the Commission on the Disappeared could not be prosecuted on the basis of that evidence. Can people be prosecuted on the basis of what happened to the Disappeared? Yes, they can.
Yes, they can if the information is found by different means. But information given to the ICR will not be admissible in criminal and civil proceedings.
That's fairly much irrelevant to this advertisement and to the majority of families that have signed it, because what they have said is, you promised us you would set up a full policing mechanism to investigate these, and where the evidence becomes available, you will prosecute. And the families are saying, set up that mechanism. Well, let's get beyond the block. That is the block. The block isn't the ICIR. The block is the Historical Investigations Unit and this national security.
So if the British government discloses information that exposes wrongdoing by individual soldiers or individual police officers, do you think prosecutions should follow, Paul?
Well, I think that's up to the families. It's absolutely not our decision. And I'll tell you why, Stephen.
Well,
what people agree on...
There would need
on,
to be a decision before... a decision in the process, wouldn't there?
Those decisions are made by the prosecution service. What we found in a series of
family... Well, families don't get to... Hold on a minute. Families don't get to write legislation or write the global rules.
Nor do we. And what the families have said in this ad is, you promise an investigative mechanism, set up the mechanism. There are families that we work with who would like to see prosecutions. There's families that we work with who have no interest in prosecutions. They're not agreed on that.
And what about...
And it's not for us to tell them what to do.
And what about disclosure? Why is it not in the ad about disclosure by paramilitaries?
Well, what's in the ad is that today's International Human Rights Day, and we're reminding the Secretary of State of their obligations under the European Convention. The IRA, UVF, UDA, Red Hand Commando, INLA and so on didn't sign up to the European Convention. The British government did. And they, at this moment in time, are in breach. We should remember, Britain is not arguing in Strasbourg that the Stormont House Agreement has not been implemented because there are illegal armed groups who have not signed up to the convention. That's not the argument. The argument you had earlier this morning is not the argument that the British government is making.
It's a very strong argument, the double standards, Paul O'Connor.
We didn't turn around and say we shouldn't have the historical inquiries team because we can't be sure that illegal armed groups won't cooperate with it.
Okay.
Nobody made that argument.
Paul, thank you. Kenny, thank you. Morning to you. William in West Belfast. Morning, William.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead.
Stephen, a very interesting debate. I was listening to Declan on this morning and I was listening to Geoffrey. And the point I was making in this programme, when the troubles broke out, a lot of these combatants, if you want to call them, were probably young. They're probably in their 60s now. Do you really think, Stephen, that they're going to go to any tribunal? Tell the tribunal what they did. You know, at this age, when the families and the grandkids, and do you think anybody who's been a combatant will seriously go to any committee and tell what they've done if they're not going to get immunity? Who wants to go to jail, Stephen, for 20 or 25 years after maybe being in the jail for 10 or 15 years and got out on their Good Friday Agreement? I don't think, Stephen, that the truth is going to come out because too many people out there do not want to tell what they did or get involved. And as far as prosecutions, who wants to be prosecuted, Stephen, for something that they did 35 years ago?
So if the truth isn't going to come out, and you heard Geoffrey Donaldson saying today that he didn't think there would be full disclosure either, then should we stop pretending to families that there's a chance?
Yes, of course. They're giving them... this is a false thing. Nobody wants to go to jail. You tell me anybody wants to go to jail, Stephen, at 60 years of age. Because anybody out there now is probably the same age as myself, who's been through the troubles, who's, if they've been involved, have done their time. They don't want to go back for something that the police haven't investigated over the last 40 years. If there's no information now, they're not going to give it themselves. And that's the way I feel, Stephen. Nobody wants to go to jail when they're 60.
Maureen in Belfast. Morning, Maureen.
Good morning, Stephen. I've just listened to this. It seems that this fresh start, it's like a gravy train for terrorists. It stinks to high heaven.
Well, and the people, how on earth is it a gravy train for terrorists? The fresh start.
Is it not? It's to get away with murder. The Justice Minister signed up to this so-called fresh start. It's ridiculous. The whole thing.
Well, Fresh Start actually, Maureen, has nothing to do with dealing with the past because that was the bit that wasn't agreed within the Stormont House Agreement.
Well, it must have something to do with it, Stephen, because they wouldn't all sit up there and accept this. We have a Justice Minister there. In fact, the Chief Constable should be congratulated. They're about the only people who are trying to do anything to solve any of this.
Well, you mentioned the Chief Constable. We've been speaking to the Chief Constable, George Hamilton.
Yes.
And he said, have a listen to this, he said that families of RUC officers murdered during the Troubles are also looking for answers.
What I am sure of is that it'll only be in a very small number of cases that there will be a satisfactory criminal justice outcome for families and for people who are grieving in relation to the historical issues. And of course, the New Beginnings of Policing was exactly that. And what's happening in the lack of a political agreement consensus on this, is that this issue of the past has been left on the lap of the current day police service, which has to have a priority around keeping people safe today and the new beginning to policing that Patton had envisaged and that we have shown a commitment to delivering.
Well, I was talking to Evelyn Glenn Holmes, and Evelyn did raise a point. She says, you know, victims need the truth. And she said when they go looking for the truth, they're quoted national security and they're fobbed off. And she was very scathing about that. What do you make of that?
Well, I think there are so many views and versions of truth out there. The Royal Ulster Constabulary, for example, lost over 300 officers. I bet a number of those families would like to know the truth about who murdered their father, brother, mother, sister, and why. And I think that events such as this and the archiving nature of this book, where people are allowed to tell stories from different perspectives, and as the author said, the pages don't turn to dust when they're put together, is actually perhaps an indicator of how we can make some progress in dealing with the complexities of the past.
And some people might say that, can we afford to rig up the past? Can we afford to have all these historical inquiries? Do the police have the resources to actually look into these investigations?
Well, it's not budgeted for in the same sense that the routine policing is. I don't think money is the big issue, because if that was part of the solution, there's £150 million set aside to finance the historical investigation unit over the next 5 years. That now looks like it's parked, so whilst I wouldn't be complacent about it, I don't think finance is the issue. The issue is people having confidence in the process. And some people in some quarters are never going to be satisfied that the PSNI is sufficiently independent of what happened in the past to be conducting these investigations. I don't agree with that, but I understand that analysis, and that's why I was hopeful and had spoke very warmly and positively about the implementation of the Historical Investigations Unit, and I had hoped that that element of the agreement could have been delivered in the Fresh Start Agreement, the Stormont House Implementation Plan.
You wouldn't have liked some of that £150 million for your own resources?
Well, I could have discussions with the Secretary of State and with the local executive ministers about funding for legacy issues. I'm not saying I'll get all that I want, but I'm quite happy to go in and have those discussions. That for me is not the primary issue, though. The primary issue is finding a mechanism that deals with this satisfactorily, that gives people confidence in it, that there is this feel of an honest broker looking at all of the material so that the issue can be resolved to people's satisfaction. And the other thing is, on this, when people have lost so much, whether or not we ever get to people being 100% satisfied is actually questionable. And I don't mean that disparagingly, I understand that. So this is difficult. What I am clear about is that there doesn't seem to be a criminal justice route out of this. And that's what the police do. That's why we needed the other facets of the Stormont House Agreement in terms of truth recovery and the ICIR and so on.
Well, that's the Chief Constable George Hamilton speaking to our reporter Nicola Weir at the book launch last night by the security journalist Brian Rowan. Dealing with the past is the subject of that new book. It's called Unfinished Peace, and it was launched last night. You're going to hear some of the contributors who were present at that book launch throughout today's programme. Liam in Draperstown and Robert Newton Abbey. Morning, Liam.
Stephen, the biggest terrorist in all of this was the British government, and they're never going to tell the truth. So any sort of truth commissions is going to be a waste of time. I watched the military action program about the military action force. Here they were shooting Protestants and Catholics and making it look as if one or other was doing it. And members of the unionist community, when you learn the truth...
I wonder, could this society cope with the real truth?
They wouldn't believe the British government. Look at Brian Nelson supplied British intelligence agents supplying weapons from South Africa to the loyalist paramilitaries. Look at steak knife. It goes on and on. The British government were the biggest terrorists here, and the Republican loyalist paramilitaries were only puppets on a string.
So the British government were the biggest terrorists.
Yes,
not the IRA, not the UDA, not the UVF, not the INLA, not the Red Hand Commando. The British government were the biggest terrorists.
Stephen, let me point out something here. The British government was a government. Look at the Pat Finucane case. 7 or 8 of the people involved in that murder were special branch agents. The Beano Casey case, a UDR man and an RUC man was let die to protect Beano Casey. And the story goes on and on. So the unionist community would need to be...
Which brings us to the question, from what you're saying today, could we cope with full disclosure? Robert Newton-Abbey. Morning, Robert.
Good morning, Stephen. I just heard you go stiff there when you mentioned the British Army, the British government being culpable for the major part of the troubles here in the country.
You know, I can assure you, Robert, I did not go stiff. Whatever that means, I did not go stiff.
I didn't call to talk about it. Let me qualify my position by saying, look, I don't believe the trouble should ever have happened. But the fact is, they did happen. And when you examine the facts, and the facts are something that people, one half of the community, don't want to know about. This is ancient historical troubles here, and it's still ongoing. But the unionist community need to examine themselves to see what part that they played in bringing this to the point where one half of the society decided that the only answer to getting rights here, and including my rights, was to take up armed struggle. Because, 900 years of talking, 80 years of 70 years of talking from 1920 or whatever it was, got nowhere. Second-class citizen. My father was a second-class citizen. I was a second-class citizen until 1970 to the Fair Employment Act. And then we got the new housing regulation where Catholics were entitled to get houses. I'm a father of a mixed family, so I'm not grinding anything against Protestants or anything else. I'm stating the facts. The unionist community need to come to the table and say, we were responsible, we wouldn't talk, we made the other half of this society second-class citizens. And I can say this as a Christian. I feel that I owe my civil and human rights to the Republican movement. That's not saying that I agreed with all the bloodshed. It should never have happened. Not one hair on any human being's head should have been hurt. British, Irish, Catholic, Protestant, dissenter. The unionist community, I listened to Jeffrey. They don't have clean hands. They don't have clean hands. They can sit there and pontificate about the murder of the Republicans and this and that and the other. You know, there's two halves to any argument.
To be clear, Jeffrey Donaldson would condemn violence on all sides.
Killers, murderers, etc., etc., etc.
And the DUP and Jeffrey Donaldson would condemn violence from any...
I like Jeffrey. I'm not condemning Jeffrey. Certainly. All I'm saying is I listen to him...
Do you think we're ready for the truth, Robert? Do you think this society is ready for the full truth?
The truth is sitting there in front of him. When the unionist community say, look, we wouldn't talk, we were guilty... We were guilty. We made our fellow countrymen second-class citizens in their own land. The British military are totally culpable, and the British government totally culpable. I'm an ex-soldier. I'm an ex-Forces Reconnaissance Unit victim.
Stay there, Robert.
They tried to set me up for murder.
Stay there, Robert. Jim Wilson joining us now. You can speak to Jim. Morning, Jim. Go ahead.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, it's just...
Good morning, Jim.
What I call it is a hamster wheel of dealing with the past. You know, we have... Our politicians getting on. You put on the unionists, and it's about full disclosure from Sinn Féin. And, you know, it's just a vicious circle. And realistically, you know, if we don't get this right, this is poisoning our future generation. This is poisoning our kids. They're constantly sitting listening to this. I was there last night at Barney's book launch, and the will and the commitment in that room, and it was devoid of a lot of major politicians, but there was a will in that room that there must be some mechanism can be done. Now, they got rid of the Civic Forum. The Civic Forum was the people of this country coming together to deal with issues. When you've got politicians trying to deal with the past, and I've said this before, they're looking over their shoulders, they're looking at their consistencies, they're looking at all sorts of things to try and stop and not to get this.
Well, the politicians are the ones, of course, who were elected, Jim. I'll remind you of that. They have a mandate.
Stephen, I understand that, but what I'm saying, they also have political people within their parties who wouldn't be happy with them doing A, B, or C.
So do you think, Jim, you're a loyalist. Jim, you're a loyalist with a loyalist past, right?
Yes.
Do you think any loyalist paramilitary is going to walk into this information retrieval?
Stephen, there's a thing called corporate responsibility, right? That's corporate responsibility. See this individualities that people are talking about going in and claiming that they've done this and they were involved in that. That will not happen. There's no way, because you're the caller on saying that no one's going to go in and give information that's going to put that guy in jail for 15, 20 years. But what loyalism would like to see is people getting closure of what happened to their loved ones in the past. And it could be done in a corporate way where the organizations that were responsible for the death and murder and mayhem that happened out there could corporately say, here's what happened. Here's how we hope to try and give you closure of what happened to your loved one. And I think that that's a responsibility.
Well, how could the victims, for example, here's another question. How could the victims of the IRA ever get full disclosure if it is the position of Sinn Féin that the IRA doesn't exist?
Well, you see,
so they can hardly magic these people out of the sky. If the IRA doesn't exist, where are they getting the full disclosure from?
Well, the IRA only doesn't exist in Sinn Féin's mind. I think in every other person's society in Northern Ireland, the IRA still exists. So let's get real. I live
Stephen,
in
can I just say two parting words?
Yes, go ahead, Robert.
Two words?
Yes.
I just want to say, Jim, and I say this with the utmost of respect, I think that the Protestant children who are all in this society, like the Catholic children, should learn some IRA's history. And then we begin with the groundwork of this problem, the historical facts, which are manifest every day here in this society. At Stormont, when they don't talk to each other, when they ignore each other, when you see them on television, they would nearly eat each other raw. And I'm sorry I have to go.
Yeah, but we don't want our children coming through what we came through with a hatred and the sectarianism. And that's what's happening, because we can't deal with our past.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.